Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 200 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Domingo.
I'm Domingo, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Domingo.
And it's good to be here. Let me just take a moment to take everything in. It's good to be here in a room of OA, in a meeting of OA, and with fellow OAs. And this is the room where I found hope. You know, I came into this program, welcome to the newcomer. And I remember coming into this program pretty hopeless. That's not saying much. I was desperately hopeless, and I had been for quite a long time. But so let me get started. What it was like, what happened, and what it is like today. Just to get the numbers out of the way, my abstinence date is April 29, 2009. Since that day, I've been relieved of 114 pounds by the grace of God and the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. And I'm really grateful for that. I'm grateful for service of any kind, because service from somebody from a different program, you know, got me in here. So I'm really grateful for that. I love service because I never know what link of a chain a service is. Kind of fantastic to think service that people do, you just never know where it's going to wind up, no matter how small or how big. So I really value service in my recovery. What was it like? So I'm going to pass out some, I'll tell you what it was like. I'm going to pass around some pictures. And the first picture really describes me to a T. It's me and my family. We're in Mexico. We used to go there for vacation every year. And my sister's up front. It's her birthday, and she's everybody's singing happy birthday. She's got a big smile. She's got the knife ready to cut her birthday cake. And I'm just in the background wondering, you know, how long this happy birthday stuff's going to go on before we get to the eating. And so I couldn't wait. So while everybody's distracted and appropriately paying attention to the birthday girl, I run my finger down the length of her cake, and then quietly put it in my mouth, and they caught me right at that moment. It was classic. But it describes me to a T, because I'm looking away. I don't care what's happening. I'm disconnected from what's going on. My only focus is the food and the cake. And I got in trouble. I didn't understand why it was such a big deal. I mean, literally the party stopped after I did that, for about 10 or 15 minutes, girls crying, you know, parents, it wasn't a pretty scene. The other thing, I won't really describe many of the pictures except for two more, and that is, you'll see me back to back, I think in 2008, and then one last year, me with a group of my peers, and you might be able to pick me out in one of them, I'm not sure about the other. But it was an annual event, and it was just funny how, like, 3 years, you know, what a difference 3 years make. In the back, I have pictures of food, because one of the ways I did it, honestly, I was over 300 pounds, and I had been for decades, and or going up there towards for decades. Always struggled with my food up and down, and I never knew why I was a compulsive overeater. I thought there was genetically something in me, or that. You know, they talk about thyroid, that I had a thyroid issue, or I had a slow metabolism. I wasn't sure, you know, until I came into the program and I got clarity around my food and I was able to understand. But one of the things I did, one of the ways I tried to manage my food is I started taking pictures of it, because it was too much trouble to write it down and log it in a journal, so I just snapped it with my picture phone. And so that was one of the ways, because honestly, I was baffled. You know, I didn't know why I had gotten over 300 pounds. You'll see a picture of me with an apple and a cup of coffee. And so there I am having apple and a cup of coffee for breakfast, which is my usual breakfast. And wondering why I'm over 300 pounds. Why I didn't realize, you know, all the other food that I ate throughout the day. I'm not a binge eater. I just never stop. So I don't, you know, there's no like go for it and binge. It's just, you know, you never slow down. You never stop. When I first came into the program and I heard three meals and nothing between, I thought that was pretty, I thought it was genius, actually. I'd never really heard it before. Like, heard it. You know, breakfast was just what I ate early in the morning, you know. Lunch was what I ate around noon, and dinner was what I was eating, you know, or 5 or 6 in the evening. But it never was like a sit-down, you know, meal, like, this is my dinner, or this is my only dinner. This is just what I'm eating now. So I'll pass these pictures around. So, you know, early on, well, you know, early on I had a problem with life. You know, just being born, I was not happy with. You know, I had been in the womb or in limbo somewhere. I don't know where I was, but it was comfortable there, you know. It was warm, it was peaceful. I didn't have any problems. That's all I knew. And then all of a sudden, I'm born, and I look around, and this the world scares me, you know. Nothing. And then what's worse is the world scares me. I start projecting to the future early on, you know, 4 or 5 years old. Like, that's when I start thinking, you know, I'm the why kid, you know, that all the teachers hate, you know, why? You know, what's after this, what's after that? Just the questioner, you know. I always questioned everything because I didn't know. I didn't know what was going on. I was kind of scared, and this place didn't seem warm and inviting to me. And so, you know, I'm the kid who would be like, you know, what's past, you know, the moon, you know, they tell me, you know, the planets, and what's, and then Pluto, and then there's another galaxy, and you know, I could go on like that forever. I mean, that's how my brain went. It just spun around. My brain, for most of my life, you know, it's been like a torture, you know, mechanism for me. I mean, sleeping issues, nightmares, this whole projection thing that I can't stop. And then what's worse is I look for an answer. You know, I ask parents and teachers, and nobody knew. And that made, I mean, I'm like, you know what, this is, what kind of outfit is this? You know what I mean? This is, you know what I'm saying? You know, and I'm being, you know, all the while I'm being raised in a religious, you know, tradition. You know, being told that, you know, I got this, from what I understand, I have this God who loves me and is all powerful, but then why did he put me here to like test me? And why, you know, and I've got to listen to these rules, and if I listen to them, I'll be, you know, with my God, and if I don't, I'm not going to be in a good place forever. And that doesn't sound good. And then why, like, if he knows everything, why test me? He already knows the answer. And if he made me imperfect, well, didn't he like set me up for failure already, you know, to begin with? So I don't like this God, this higher power, my understanding. And so I'm just saying all this so you can kind of, hopefully I can communicate what kind of environment I felt like I was in, you know, when I was young, you know, five, six, seven years old. And what brought me comfort was food. You know, food was the closest thing to heaven, you know, when I was a kid. I mean, I can't think of anything. Magic Mountain was good with food, though. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, things like that. You know, it's food, and then we'll go to Magic Mountain, you know? It's funny about destinations and places I used to go. Everything was food, you know? Everything was food. If I went to, you know, we didn't go to San Francisco to go look at the bridge. We went for the, what is that stuff? It's in a, what is it? The clam chowder? In the bowls, you know, I mean, everything, yeah, in the bread, right? I mean, why else go to San Francisco other than that, right? So, or one of my girlfriends would, she liked going to Puerto Nuevo down in Mexico every year for the lobster and all you could eat, lobster, beans, tortillas, beer, you know, that's the, there was never, every time I went somewhere, unless I had to go, there was always a food. It was always a food destination. So I wasn't the popular kid, but I desperately wanted to be, you know. And nowhere where I was good enough, you know. Nowhere where I always was craving to be someplace. I don't know where this magic place was, but I was always craving to be. So I pursued the the popular kids. I was the joker. You know, just let me hang out with you. You know, I'll keep you entertained. You know, I'll juggle whatever it takes. I'll make a fool of myself. I mean, that was me, you know. And I always looked at people from the outside. Like, I'd never bothered to try to get to know people. I didn't know how to do that. I just observed them and saw what they did on the outside and figured out, like, that's what I should be doing. So the popular kids, you know, they dress well, they were good on current events, they were thin, you know, and I thought that's what made them popular, so that's what I wanted to do. But I couldn't. I was a chubby kid. I had a lot of baby fat. I mean, I wasn't too heavy, but I mean, I did wear the husky pants. You know, I was never a skinny jeans type of guy. And I was embarrassed of that, you know. I wanted to have a girlfriend, and that wasn't happening, you know. I couldn't get past the friend stage, you know. And you know, the popular kids all had, you know, it was girls and guys that were all hanging out together, you know. It was, you know, the 1970-something version of 902, what's that TV show, 90210 or whatever, you know. Everybody's having fun and going places and cool parents. My parents were older. You know, my dad had me when he was 45, and I'm the second of the oldest of seven kids. So you know, I had friends that had their, nothing in my life was, I had nothing going on. So I created this double life, you know. Who do you want me to be? I'll be that person. Just accept me. But, you know, that grew to be unbearable. Just every year, the pressure compounded time and time again. You know what I mean? I mean, I did it for a long time. I remember, you know, coming home and just like, being myself. And then having panic attacks in the morning. Because it was like, okay, now I gotta do, you know, it was funny. I'd wake up in a good mood, but as soon as the shower turned on, you know, that said, you're gonna start your day, like, this is the real thing, you know, you're gonna get ready and you're gonna go out into the world, I would have these panic attacks, and I never knew why until I realized, I mean, I was just setting up and doing this dual life. So, again, the only comfort that I had was in food, just eating food all the time. When I really gained weight was when I was around 8 or 9. Just one summer, I was always an active kid, but one summer, splitting hot dogs and then boiling them for like 20 minutes and watching them like flour, you know, and then, you know, it just was amazing to me. I mean, I just spent all day, you know, coming in and just doing that. And, it was awesome. And that's when I came back after that summer, you know, people looked at me and said, whoa. You know, that was like my first, you know, what's going on here? And my attempt to, come on in. My attempt to try to control my weight. I'm kind of like a one-trick pony. I did try restricting. You know, I did. The best I could do with restricting is 2 weeks solid. I didn't have lunch during high school. Like, that's like the best I could restrict. Otherwise, I had these little rules. Like, if I ate a Big Mac, but I took off the secret sauce and the cheese. Like, that it was just bread and meat. It's basic. It's raw, almost raw. So that was kind of like my. And then if they didn't take it off after I asked it, it's like, that's God's will. You know what I mean? I mean, I told them no cheese. But all right. But that was, you know, that was my whole deal. I did, you know, but for a while the food wasn't loud enough for me. The food didn't calm my brain enough. You know, I had this brain that just kind of tortured me all the time. So then, you know, when I was a teenager, I resorted to drugs and alcohol for a period. And I do everything hardcore, and I'm not going to talk about that, but just, you know, it didn't take me long to just be down in the gutter, you know, and somebody looked at me and said, dude, I mean, you look like a walking skeleton. So I did a Geographic, and fortunately, my higher power was gracious enough to kind of relieve that from me. But then I discovered a-holism as a disease. I mean, I had, you know, conquered drugs and alcohol, you know, on my own. You know, I didn't understand about grace. I thought, you know what, I just determined that I was going to do it, and it happened. And then I realized, you know, and then I started getting into shape. I was real skinny from that event. I started getting into shape. I was in a work program, so we ran, and we, 'cause kind of military a little bit. And so we ran, and then I became the popular guy, you know, and then, oh, that was all I needed. You know, nothing's worse for a compulsive overeater than bad fortune other than good, you know, good fortune, you know. I mean, give me a little success and my ego just soars, you know. I have a picture, I don't have it there, but it was like a dawn coming in, and, you know, just the dawn of this huge ego just came up. You know, I became the guy who thought, well, now I'm in shape, so now everybody who's not in shape has no character, has no value, they're lazy, they can't, you know. I started judging, I mean, I started doing the same thing I'd always done, judge myself and other people from their outsides, you know, never understanding. I missed the mark my whole life. Basically, if I were to die before I come in a program, that would be like a good thing to put on my tombstone. You know, Domingo, he just missed the mark. You know, he just never got it, you know. I just never understood. Today I can lovingly say that I'm dense and slow. It takes me a while to get stuff. You know, that's, I like a slow pace. You know, I don't know how I lived a compulsive overeating life. Just that life. I mean, I know it so well. Once in a while in recovery, I don't know where it comes from. I don't know if it's a gift from a higher power, but I'll feel that for a split second, that sense of overwhelming, like all the world's on my shoulders, like it used to be day in and day out. I'll just feel it for like a split second. I'll go, okay, that's right, I remember. You know, let me go to a meeting. Let me work a step. But I. You know, fat. Then, I couldn't get to the shape that I wanted to get, and I didn't have the motivation to do it. So I thought, if somebody gets me there, I can maintain it. It's just not, I don't have the motivation to get there, so I joined the Marine Corps. And they did. You know, I was 22, I was 169 pounds, 29-inch waist. I was in great shape. I had always been an active kid. And so the Marine Corps was it worked for me. And I remember the boot camp instructor, right before they let us go, you know, kind of out into the regular Marine Corps, he said, you know, you guys are in the best shape of your life, you're Marines, you know, you have a uniform, that counts for a lot with the ladies. But, you know, but let me tell you right now, you know, in a year, most of you guys are not going to maintain that. You know, take my advice. Stay on top of this, and you have a lot going for you. Was this what this drill instructor said? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be one of those that gets it. You know, I'm always the one other different than everybody else. You know, yeah, everybody else, you know, they make mistakes, and I'm the one that's going to avoid all those mistakes and get it. You know, I'm that special one. Today I recognize that I am very special, but I'm not any different. We're all special equally. So after a few years, you know, I rushed to get my life together, you know, found a fiance, girlfriend. It was weird. It was girlfriend, father-to-be, then fiance, and then marriage in Vegas. So that's kind of like the Jerry Springer relationship life that I lived before. And it got worse right after that, after my divorce. But you know, I was 22. I was in the best shape of my life. Had a fiance, a baby on the way, a home that we were renting, but with an option to buy, and really cool landlords. They were going to give us a good deal. We had cars. We both had government secure jobs. We had friends and families that loved us. And thank God for that experience, because I realized with my disease that wasn't enough. It fell flat. And there's no hell worse than getting what I want and it not satisfying me. You know, like having an itch that I can't scratch. There's nothing worse. That's where the hopeless feeling came, is having an itch that I did everything to scratch and yet it didn't work. You know? So I'm really grateful for that experience of having everything that I thought would make me happy and it not doing anything for me. So, you know, like a good compulsive overeater, I brought it all down on my head. Quit my job, got divorced, started being estranged from my friends and family, and I thought my next so where my next kind of horizon for success, or where I'm going to make myself happy, is through success and fortune, you know. So I worked for this company, started becoming, getting promoted. I went from a driver to eventually 12 years later to a senior manager, you know, being groomed for a district manager position. My goal was to make $100,000 a year, and I was close to that. The next level would get me there. But you know, I was, and all the while my weight is just going up and down and up and down. You know, I'm compulsively over exercising. I don't know if I mentioned that, but that was like my main way, my whole life of trying to, everything I saw was calories. And I would do at my very bottom, I guess, of compulsively over exercising, or exercise bulimic, I guess a lot of people say it that way, is, you know, I'd get up in the morning, I'd run 3 miles, I'd do some calisthenics, some weightlifting during lunch, 5 to 7 miles. After dinner, I used to skateboard, boogie board, play basketball, bicycle ride, run, or all of them all in one evening. You know what I mean? The only thing crazier was this guy. He was a Marine. He posted, like, I need, like, a workout partner. We're going to do, like, 100 miles running over the course of the weekend. And that's, like, the only guy that I said, yeah, he's, you know, there's something wrong with that guy. But, you know, I was just below that guy. You know what I mean? There was only one other guy that used to do more exercise than I did. But, you know, I've come to realize, first of all, it's a very poor way to manage my weight. I mean, just to try to counter the amount of calories that I used to eat. I love to eat all the time, and I love rich foods. I mean, so I can blow an hour's worth of really extreme exercising, you know, in 6 bites or less. You know what I mean? So how is that? How am I ever going to keep up with that? You know, I just couldn't. So up and down, and then the pattern was, I compulsively overexercise, I get in really good shape, and then I keep. See, I thought I was going to be like this this phoenix. You know, I thought the answer was like breaking through this other something outside of me was going to like make me happy, and I was going to break through. And if I worked out hard enough, I would push myself hard. I would just like break through and become this different person. You know. And it never happened. I usually wound up just, you know, injuring myself, being on the sidelines for 3, 4, 6 months, sometimes longer, compulsively overeating like I always did, and then zooming back up. So I did that for decades and decades. All right. How much time? Let me do a little quick time check.
20 minutes.
I have 20 minutes left? Okay. So, so where was my bottom? Okay, so after... I also got, while I was doing my little drug days, I contracted a medical condition that likes to affect the liver, and is in the blood and likes to affect the liver and cause cancer. I found that out in 2003, and that really depressed me. That, and then the death of my father years later. So for about 5 years prior to that, and then after 2000, for like the last 15 years before coming into program, I was like I was just depressed. Nothing was working, and I was just trying to hang on. My weight never went down after that, really significantly. It just kept, at that time, I was pushing 300 pounds, and eventually went to about 315, my highest measurable weight. I remember my brother looking at me, you know, right before program, and he looked at me disgustingly, and he said, "Dude, we're like," you know, he had that look, you know, like he just smelled something really bad, and said, what are you, like, over 300 pounds? And I said, no. And I didn't say how much I was, but I went and compulsively over-exercised for, like, 3 months. And then I came back to him as though we had never ended the conversation. I go, I'm 187. And, I'm 287. And, and he didn't even care or remember what it is. It's funny, he's over 300 pounds himself now. But I don't get the chance to ask him if he's over 300 pounds now. But I love the guy. You know, my family, bless them, they may or may not be compulsive overeaters, but they're doing like all the same stuff that I did. You know, my brother couple weeks ago, him and my sister, they drove 90 miles in one day on their bicycles from Pomona to Palm Springs. They did a two-day trip from L.A. to San Diego. They're planning another three-day trip up to another. You know, those are the type of, like, I didn't run, like, around a track. I ran from city to city, you know? Like, that's what I did to compulsively exercise, you know? And, like, my dream would be to have enough money where you just drop me off, you know, at Canada, and I'll walk my way back. You know what I mean? Like, that's what, that's kind of like, so my bottom, you know, I did a geographic. Well, before the geographic, I'm living in my car because I can't afford my apartment. I can't afford my apartment if I didn't compulsively overeat and spend all my money on food. 80 to 90% of my money has all gone on food. I mean, before coming to the program, I had no car, no assets, no anything really to speak of. And I kept getting evicted from my apartments. I mean, there was, if my apartment rent was $50 a month, I'd either pay it late or struggle to pay it. I was living with, and my brother, I rented I had a $350 apartment, like studio, you can't even call it apartment, in L.A. I couldn't maintain it. I had to move in with my brother for 200 and something, and I still couldn't make, eventually he wound up kicking me out, like, how long are you going to, you know, it was temporary help, you know, it wasn't like you just keep hanging out. But I was really demoralized. I'm like, I started realizing I can't do anything. Like, I can't even maintain an apartment. So the choice was, you know, compulsively over-exercise freely or get an apartment and, like, pay $800 for, like, a roof over my head when I could use that money to compulsively overeat. So the decision was clear. I decided to live in my car for, like, a year and a half. And I did that. It was a Cadillac, though, so I always like to say, you know, look, I may be homeless, but I'm in a Cadillac. That's got to count for something, right? Give me a break. But it was a nightmare. And I wouldn't, like, tell anybody I'm homeless, but I didn't think it was a bad plan. You know, I just wouldn't tell you because you wouldn't understand, because then I have to explain, you know, I mean, what I'm doing and how I'm going to be saving money and how this is really a good thing. And it is funny to look back now. You know, I love being a compulsive overeater in recovery. Because, you know, the promise is I will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. You know, my past has become my richest gold. I mean, just all the stuff that I went through, my experiences, had such a great feeling. Because I got, you know, coming into the program, working the steps, I got all my life back. You know what I mean? None of it was a waste of time. I got it all back. As a matter of fact, that's like the richest part, you know, that's the rich part of life. I've always wanted the cream of life. I didn't understand that I was like throwing away 90% of like real life for that supposedly cream, you know. I can't tell you the level of discomfort that's come from trying to seek comfort in my life. It just works, you know, it's the opposite. So there I am having panic attacks, going to a psychologist, or I'm not sure if it was a psychologist. I mean, I was really like, I was in bad shape. Just, I started developing these things where I couldn't like be indoors. Like I'd have to be close. Like I started developing phobias that I'd never had. You know, that's how the level of anxiety, how high the level of anxiety was. It was as though somebody, you know, that little valve, that fight or flight, you know, thing, you know, you get adrenaline, you got to do something real quick. What felt like it was on all the time. Like even in my sleep, it felt like adrenaline was just running through my body all the time. Of course, living the double life, you know, living in my car yet not telling anybody about it, you know, having to rent motels when it was my weekend with my daughter, and telling her the lie that, well, I live too far away and I don't want to drive you and drive you back, so we're just going to stay here. And of course, meanwhile, everybody like knows, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, you know, trying to keep it on the hush hush. My employees wanted to like fire me, you know. They were like, they were just figuring out how to get, you know, get me out, because my expectations were so high of them and so high of myself. Just, I was unbearable. And like the big book says, you know, I was one of these guys that I'll either, you know, be an a-hole to you or I'll be real nice, but either way, I'm just trying to manipulate, you know, the system to get what I want. And the big book says people will know it. You know, people will know that ultimately you're just trying to get what you want. They're going to get a little scared and they're going to start reacting to that. And that's exactly what happened. Estranged from all my family. One of my sisters I was estranged for 30 years. For 30 years. And I used to, when I was a kid, I used to think like, I used to hear older people like say that and be like, well, that's your brother, that's your sister, that's your mom, that's your dad. You know, how can you like not talk to them for 30 years? And then, well, I found out, you know, it's just one day at a time. You know, that's how over the course of 30 years, I could not talk to my sister. Had deep resentments towards her, you know. What else? You know, probably the shining light was my relationship with my daughter. I tried to salvage that as best I could. As a matter of fact, I could safely say that's probably the only reason why I was still like, even, thank you, while I was even trying to keep living, you know, was for my daughter. That was the only light. You know, I was walking around like, I couldn't like feel real world, like it had a film over it, like things were great, like I saw people laughing somehow, I just didn't know how they were laughing, like having joy, you know, it just, I couldn't break through that. I knew people like their careers, but I didn't know how to make that happen. So I did a geographic, and you know, when I'm ready to listen, you know, some bum can come out of the freaking Skid Row and say, you should go to OA. And I go, okay, you know, I should go to OA. I mean, literally, you know, well, my barber told me about CA Howe, another program, and then I heard OA, and the next day I was in a meeting. You know, I was just ready to listen. I was just, my greatest successes have always come from just giving up and being willing to fail, or from actual failure. You know, I'm either boxed in by my higher power. It's like, you don't got no choice. You know, here's a gift, you know, the gift of failure. Or I boxed myself in. I'm not sure where I was going with that. But failure is the door for me, and that I had failed enough. So I came in, and I tried to do it on my own. Like I said, you know, I heard three meals and nothing between. I heard this abstinence thing. And 30 days later, but I was struggling. I was white-knuckling it. You know, every night I would put my breakfast in the fridge, and I'd like spend most of the night going to the fridge and opening it and just looking and just dreaming about my breakfast, you know. And then, but when the breakfast time came, it tasted like, it didn't taste like I expected or imagined it, but I was doing three meals and nothing in between. For me, my experience is that I have alcoholic foods. I'm just like an alcoholic. Alcoholics, they drink. They still continue to consume beverages. They drink orange juice, coffee. You know, they just don't drink certain liquids. Well, for me, I'm an alcoholic when it comes to alcoholic foods. There's certain foods, for me, they contain flour and sugar that I cannot, that create a craving in me, that create the phenomenon of craving and an obsession of the mind. I can't just eat one, and once I start eating them, I can't stop eating them, and then I can't think about eating them while I'm eating them. You know what I mean? That's how the obsession of the mind works, you know, for me. My mind will drive me to go and get that thing because thinking it's going to satisfy me. So that's just my experience. So I was fortunate. I feel very fortunate. I saw the sponsor. He was happy. At the day I met him, he had maintained a 341-pound weight loss for 4 years. So I said, okay, he's happy. He's not only reduced a lot of weight, but he's kept it off for 4 years. You know, that's like a good start. You know, I'm going to ask him to be my sponsor. And I wasn't sure I was until I was looking at some literature and he came up to me. You know, he's doing his, you know, his newcomer walk. You know, hey, how you doing? And he goes, that's a great book. I go, yeah, I can't afford it, though. And I walked out of the meeting. He came after me. He goes, here, man, I spotted you the book. You know, and that was like, just that's why I love service, because I never know. You know, somebody bought me a book. He became my sponsor 2.5 years later. You know, my life's like changed. You know, so it's just amazing. And you know what? He had the whole program. He had the experience of the whole program. His sponsor and his sponsor lineage, they were compulsive overeaters and sober alcoholics, and they did the steps from the big book and the A 12 and 12, and he gave me the whole program. He said, here's who you're going to call, how many outreaches you're going to call, here's how many meetings you're going to go per week, this is what you're going to eat for, you know. I'm like, I was dumb, like, you know what I mean? It was great because I was dumb and I didn't know, and look, whatever, I'm a Marine, what are you going to ask me to do that I haven't done before? You know, that's where ego kind of worked in my favor. I'm like, you know, give me the formula. I thought he had some secret. I always thought that you had some secret combination of food that would improve your metabolism, and that was the trick to losing weight. Because I never thought you could just lose weight and not, you could lose weight and not exercise. I thought that was always a, I didn't understand, you know what, just eat less calories than you need in the day. Like, it's math, and you'll lose weight. I didn't understand that. I always thought it was some other weird combination. So he gave it to me. He started doing it, and didn't know about this higher power. Came in an atheist. You know, I told you before about what I thought about my higher power, about my conception of God, and I didn't believe in him. But what I did, I didn't like. You know, I didn't like, and I severely hated him, I could say. And you know, he gave me the whole plan. I started going to meetings. I started 30 days later doing step work. I remember, it's funny because I'm doing this whole speaker thing, and you know, this always hurts my ego, you know? It challenges me. But you know what? When I first hit my 30 days, I thought they were going to have a press conference for me. You know? I was like, woo! You know, I had seen those NFL guys get recruited, you know, out of college, and the lights and the table, and they've got their, you know, their jersey, their new jersey, and I mean, I pictured that. Last year for my home group, last year, actually had like news paper, like with big headlines, and then they just put my picture on, instead of like the over the person's picture. It was pretty cool. They gave me a microphone. I finally got my press conference in LA. It was awesome. They're a good group. If you guys are ever in Orange County, the La Habra pizza box group on Thursday night, 7 p.m. is a great meeting. And yeah, he started telling me, you know, working the steps and being present and don't focus, and you're just eating this just for today, but what about tomorrow? And it's like, just keep doing this, you know? Just keep doing it. What do you got to do right now? You know, where are your feet? You know, where are your feet right now? So I did it, and, you know, it sounded exciting. He had me read 5 pages of the big book, so already early on I started, like, hearing about a spiritual experience and about recovery and about the miracles of the program, and I started getting excited. I was waiting. So 2 or 3 months down the line, you know, I'd started losing weight. My work life had improved. I started doing outreach calls to my family. Because I'm just doing outreach calls, you know. I never could call anybody. It was always transactional. If I called you or you called me, it was business. You know, and I had hundreds of contacts. I was involved with a lot of things. But I could never pick up the phone and say, hey, how are you doing? I'm having a hard time. I didn't know how to do that. So I'm doing these outreach calls, sharing, like, my daily activities. So I start calling my family. Hey, how's it going? You know, and they're like, what do you want? What do you want? You know, how much? You know? How much? My brother, God bless him, man. He had a wife, 3 kids, 2 cars, a mortgage, and made less money than him. And he's like the guy, like, I leaned on financially more than anybody. He'd look at me and go, dude, what? Like, he didn't understand. And, you know, he didn't understand what was going on. I don't blame him. I mean, I know what happened. I ate it all. But I wouldn't have understood either. How much time do I have?
3 minutes.
3 minutes. Okay. So what is it like now? So I'll just say this really quickly. God is a relationship with my higher power. Is the greatest thing. I'm just going to talk about my higher power for 3 minutes. I think that's good. Is the most amazing thing. And I came in like I told you how I came in. And the first higher power is, because the big book, it says God. I'm like, damn, I can't understand this infinite being, but I can understand power greater than myself. Like a big brother, like someone that looks just like me, but like knows one more answer when I get into a jam than I do. Like, okay, like I could wrap my head around having a big brother, conception of a big brother. Of course, ego had to look just like me and be like, you know, not too far off the mark, you know, not too far off the mark, but just, you know, had one more answer than I did. Eventually, and one of the relationships that I had, she said, "Well, you know, your relationship, your higher power is going to evolve." And I'm like, "No, well, I don't need any more evolved. This is good. This is working." Little did I realize that it would revolutionize my life. So a couple of months into program, I'm taking a shower, I'm having a good day, and I'm wondering, when is God going to come into my life? You know what I mean? All this stuff's happening in my life, you know, and I'm wondering when he's going to come into my life. So right then, this story that I heard about the two sets of footprints on the sand, I don't know if you ever heard of it, you know, where basically God's like, "Oh yeah, that's you and me walking in the sand. I'm walking by you, you know, next to you, you know, accompanying you through life." And he goes, "Well, look, you know, in those hard times, you know, it was only one set of footprints. Why did you leave me?" And I'm not gonna tell you what the story says, but what I heard, and this whole little narrative is going on in my head because I'm wondering, when is he gonna come into my life? He goes, "Well, see right there, that's when I carried your dumb ass." And that's just kind of like that's kind of the relationship that me and my higher power have today, you know? And I don't take offense because I know I'm a little slow on the uptake. It takes me a while to get stuff. Even coming to program powerless, the concept of powerlessness took me a while. I still don't know it, but I'm like, "Oh, powerless. Oh, you mean completely powerless?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant I just say that so that I can get on to the next step." You know, I didn't know that I actually had to mean it. It's funny because that's one thing about life. I never think people are seriously. I think I just do stuff to get a result. I don't actually do stuff for the purpose of doing whatever it is I'm doing. So what else can I say? My relationship with my higher power has definitely grown. I've had a couple of spiritual experiences in this program. And, you know, my whole outlook on life, I haven't learned it, just how I am today. I can't even try to be good. That's what I learned. I have no power to improve my life or improve my life. I can't even trying to be good doesn't work for me. The only thing, and I'll wrap up with this, thank you for that, is by work, all my job is just to come in and work the steps, and then everything else gets taken care of for me. When I first read that in the big book that I'm going to develop a relationship with a higher power that's going to solve my problems for me, I thought, bullshit, I don't know how that works. But lo and behold, it does. Anyways, I'm grateful to, thank you for asking me to speak, and thank you for letting me be of service.